Welcome back to the Unending TBR podcast. It's Nicole again, but I am not alone today. Oh, no, no, no. I have such a special treat for you with this episode's author interview. I can't wait to share it with you, so I won't. Let's dive in. So I am here this week. I am so happy to welcome to the podcast, Ronnie Kendig. Thank you for joining me, Ronnie.
Yay! I'm so excited to be here.
So why don't you give to any of our listeners too who don't know your work, which I mean, who doesn't, but can you introduce yourself to what you write and who you are as an author?
So I'm Ronnie Kendig. I have been writing published for 13 years now, and I write rapid fire fiction. So I tend to write a lot of action and adventure, but mostly in a paramilitary bent. I do have space operas, science fiction, and fantasy, but I'm most known for my paramilitary suspense, and I really love writing that. It's a passion for me to share about our military heroes. So,
yeah, no, and you do that so well. One thing that I've always loved, and even people who are like, oh, that's not the typical genre. And I'm like, but Ronnie Kendig's characters, just, they're fantastic. I always loved your characters. Now, what do you feel is a real critical part about crafting characters that really do reach out, they grab the reader's attention and their imagination and really their heart? Like, what do you feel is key?
I think it's really, really important for characters to be relatable. So, okay, how do you do that? Well, you make them raw, you make them broken, because I have yet to meet a perfect person. I will when I go enter the pearly gates, but I'll meet our Lord and Savior, but you know, none of us are perfect and pure. And if people can't relate to that, and we can relate to brokenness, we can relate to someone who's been through something we've been through. So that's why I like, I spend a lot of time on my character development before I ever go into a story. If I don't know my character, I won't write my story.
You've never like discovered a character like throughout the course of the story? Are they pretty concrete in your mind before you begin?
They are. The only character who really kind of surprised me, and I just kind of had this idea for her that she was like a computer programmer hacker, was Mercy Maddox. And the first scene I ever wrote with her, she was just like, boom, she was fully formed there, snark and all. And I just remember writing her and laughing because she just kind of came out of nowhere and she was starting to steal the show from me. So,
oh, yeah, she caught us all by surprise too, I feel. So many of your readers are fans of your action, like your brand, rapid fire fiction, and those action packed scenes. How do you approach writing and like choreographing those scenes in the head so that way they like really come out as they do on the page, like you're watching them?
That's a really good question. I'm doing that mentoring with Sunrise, which, and I was talking to them and I'm like, I told them, you know, don't write action just to write action, because then your reader's just going to be bored. It's going to be pointless and they're going to start skipping those scenes. So you really want it in your action scene. The action scene has to be connected to your character in terms of their past, in terms of their vulnerabilities. I spend a lot of time on them. I will go through and just kind of get the logistics down of what's there. And then I will go back and I'll look at the environment, you know, what's around them. How can I pull the environment in a little bit? And then I, you know, mostly I keep emotion out of it, because when you're in those true fight scenes, it's, you know, fight or flight, you know, you're either going to fight or you're going to run away, and your mind's not really sitting there thinking about how beautiful, you know, her paisley shirt is. So, you know, I just try to really focus on that. And, you know, one of the benefits I have is that I have a black belt, second degree black belt in Taekwondo. So I do literally walk out those scenes either with my husband or even just with myself. And there's a great scene in Crown of Souls at the end with an arrow. And I went to our chief master and I said, this is what I need to happen. What can they do? And so he and my husband acted it out. And I was just like, oh, good, 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 good. So then I recorded it. I did my absolute best to capture every little nuance and move and everything like that. So I do put a lot of work into those action scenes to make sure it's so easy to get lost for a reader to get lost in them when they're reading them. So it just takes a lot of finessing to make sure it has a point and it has value to the reader. So
that makes a long-winded
explanation.
No, that was great. That makes a lot of sense. And I can see that now after you've like said that. I'm like, that's why it means so much, is because like it's, you're right, it's tied into the story. It just doesn't happen. So right. Makes a lot of sense. So now what challenges do you feel like you're facing when you're balancing those action-packed scenes with your character development and the emotional depth in your novel? How do you work that up?
The challenge is, you know, like I said, those action scenes need to have value and they need to have a point. So being able to carry that point and that value into the fallout, because that's really where your character is going to be thinking through, you know, if it was a high action scene where their life is in danger or the life of someone they care about is in danger, being able to, after you come out of that fight or flight, you've got this adrenaline dump where emotions are just there and they're on your sleeve. And I maximize that. That's to me where you get some of your best pivot points in your character arc and development, and not in the actual action, but what comes out of it, what they, you know, they're thinking through the scene, you know, thinking about if you're ever in a car accident, you're thinking through all those little things afterwards, right? And the emotional toll. And, you know, like I was in a car accident just outside DC with all my kids and just thinking about all of them and how they got hurt. And that's the same thing your character needs to do. And that pulls through those emotional threads and those arcs from, it doesn't happen in the action scene because that's just fight or flight. And then the fallout is where you dissect that.
And sometimes it can be like a little bit later because that your adrenaline is on high for a while. And then it's like maybe a couple hours later, then you just like.
Yeah, whatever you need to happen. And I mean, it could be that when they come out of that, they are determined more than ever that you know, there's no relationship, you know, just leave me alone. You know, this is too, life is too dangerous, whatever. And then later you could have, totally.
Yeah. That's again, yes. And now that you say it, it's like, okay, I can totally see that. Okay. So I have remembered when you had said, I think it was on one of your lives when you were announcing for the Sunrise series, you said that you don't baby your characters. Why do you feel that is such a critical part of your storytelling signature?
It kind of ironic that you asked this because I've spent a lot of time in prayer about this lately because I do not write the sweet, happy, sappy, romantic story. That's not my audience. That's not what I write. Now, you know, with Havoc, you know, yeah, I got a little off into that. Life is not easy. We have been through so much in our family, you know, on Brian's side, on my side, and maybe it's a little cathartic to release, you know, to unleash all my characters. But again, I think it just goes back to what is relatable. We live in a hurting world, and that's what people relate to when they can see and identify themselves in a character and see how maybe they come out of it. Or they see a loved one in a character. I've had emails come to me, you know, like, especially with the Discarded Heroes, like, thank you. I understand what my husband's going through now, never did before. So I think it's just, again, that relatability and understanding, you know, just the human condition. And I think I'm bored when it's all even keeled and happy and everybody's just, you know, moving along. And even, you know, some of my, the girls, when I was editing their chapters, it's like, oh, this is just too perfect. we gotta shake this up a little bit. It's too happy slappy. We, you know, this is a Ronnie Kendig novel. We need to put some grunge into this.
Oh yeah. No. And I do feel like that is such a, it makes for very powerful, impactful stories. Like you know, and I feel like even, you know, I absolutely loved Havoc, but I, even in that one, there's like, you know, they had stuff that they were dealing with on both sides, mm-hmm. you know, and I loved seeing that. It was like those raw, real emotions. They just feel
right.
Real.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So speaking of like emotional depth and stuff like that, readers often connect, like they'll read those scenes or, you know, they connect with the characters somehow on an emotional level. Can you discuss any particular scene in your book that like holds meaning for you and why you think that that will like resonate with readers as well?
I think when you reading that, the very first thing that hit my mind was, it's kind of early on in the book, maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 chapters in maybe, where there's this, this act, there's this, they're being attacked. The hotel's being attacked, and, Crew and, Vienna have to dart into the city to get away from, the assailants. And Vienna, who is a stunt woman and does martial arts, you know, she ends up having to neutralize, to kill someone to protect, to so they don't kill her. And she's done all this stuff, all these visceral things, but she had never taken a life before. And I wanted her to experience that and him to understand. So that scene where, you know, he's in full, you know, full yeah. operator mode, and he detects that she is starting to crumble. And so he just kind of tucks her as they're going through the city, tucks her in this corner by a fence, and they're taking cover, and he hears her start crying, and he just stays there and lets her do that. He doesn't baby her. He mm-hmm. doesn't try to get in her mess. He lets her work through it. And that was, to me, so powerful. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it.
Oh. I love that.
He understood her strength. Yeah. He knew she didn't need him saying it was going to be okay, and that, you know, he understood that he let her process it and work through it was his way of saying he understood. And it was all done without words. And I don't know. I loved that scene. And I get excited when I think about that scene, because it was just, it resonates for her, because she's done this MMA, you know, the stunt woman type of stuff. And she's always felt like she's had to prove herself as a woman, but to him, she doesn't. And that was just such a powerful scene for me.
I know. I loved it how, and I don't know, again, like what magic you do. It's like, even like the nonverbal communication, you got that connection about what they did and what that meant for that, you know, him not trying to suddenly fix it for her and stuff like right. that. Just them working through that in a nonverbal way, it just felt so, so perfect for their characters and what they needed yeah. to go through.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely agree. So how did the decision to use your first series, A Breed Apart, for the Sunrise season, how did that come to be?
Well, it's kind of funny, because when Susie called me and we were talking about what to do, you know, she like kind of offhandedly say, and not, you know, not your dog series. And I sat there and I thought, well, yeah, definitely my dog series, because I wanted to do that, because since writing the A Breed Apart series, I had adopted and had Volt. Mm-hmm. He changed my life in such a radical way. And living with a working dog changed what I mean, I had all this research. I you know, I did the A Breed Apart when people weren't really writing about that yet. And the research was very hard to come by. And in that 10, 12 years time frame, I'd made a lot of connections through the MW community, foster puppy community, because of Volt, and having to get help because I had to figure out how do I bring this working dog down to civilian mode? And I can't, you know, never call him a pet, but I wanted people to understand how amazing these dogs are. And so that I was really excited to be able to do that. And God just opened a lot of doors for me to be able to talk. And I was so thrilled because Master Sergeant Meg Hammes gave me that endorsement, which just blew me away. Cause I mean, that's like the creme de la creme for me of endorsements. She was a handler. She deployed to, I believe, Afghanistan, and she was a trainer, evaluator. She wrote some of the curriculum for the puppy program, and it's just like, and she loved the book. And I was just like, oh my gosh, that was amazing for me. But I put a lot of Volt into Havoc.
Yeah.
That was really kind of healing for me, you know, having lost him a few years ago. So anyway.
No, I loved his personality. And it's like, I don't know if it's just been a while since I've read the first series, but there did seem to be like a special vibrancy about Havoc. I loved how, again, in your live back when you announced it, how it's like these military working dogs that you have in your books, they're not just like side character pets. They're so much central focus to the story. Like yeah. It wouldn't be the same story if you did not have the dog involved. And that totally comes through. And I love that like animal human bond. So right.
Well, and that's one thing I told the ladies that I was mentoring. I'd be working on a scene with them and I'd be like, where's your dog? Where's the dog? And I was like, this dog is a third main character and you need to have every scene. He needs to be present or her and accounted for and active in that scene, not just, oh, he's licking somebody's boots or something, you know. It was very important to me that the dog be the main character. It's like his face is on the cover, so he needs face time on the scene.
Oh, yes. I love it. So what do you think is something that many people do not realize about the world of military working dogs?
I honestly don't think people comprehend the bond. Mm-hmm. I've had dogs, I've had cats, and it's just very special and they tear our hearts up. But when you put your life on the line and you are relying on that dog, there's just a bond, and they're so fiercely loyal and they're trained to that handler. So I really think that's it. Is, you know, when Volt died, I remember a lot of people saying, oh, I remember when my dog died, you know, and I was just like, it just wasn't the same. And I wasn't his handler, but I helped him reintegrate back, you know, into society, so to speak, come out of civilian mode. And I remember it took about a year before he ever licked me and gave me a first kiss. And I remember being so shocked because he was a working dog. And I really don't think people understand that difference, that bond, and how deep it is, and that they're never pets, because, you know, for Volt, he had that aggression training. So it's a game changer.
Yeah. Do you feel like it's part of the breed too, with the Belgian on one? Yeah.
Yes.
Like they're intense. Period.
They are. Yeah, they are. We have Andromeda now, and she's 19 months old, and she's a whole lot of psycho, but she is so sweet. Lackland, which is where a lot of them are bred, is very particular, and the puppy program that they have, you know, the training that they initially have right out of the gate, it changes everything, and it changes their, you know, how they bond and where they bond, and, you know, it's just, yeah, it's definitely that Belgian Malinois, Dutch Shepherd, you know, type of breed is pretty, they're very intense dogs.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I know. I know, out of respect for the breed, I could never own one. I'm not that caliber of a person.
Well, you know, I was just telling Brian, because we've got, you know, we've got to detrain her, because like Andromeda, we call her Drama, because they train them to be desensitized from a very early age. They will explore anything, go into any situation, any harm, you know, anything, and it could be so harmful. And they teach them, you know, the bite training is done, you know, pretty early, where they, you know, they teach them to grab onto something and not let go. So it's like, it's not cool when it's your arm. So, yeah, it's, I didn't think I would ever do it. And I'm kind of, I can't say I regret it because I adore her, but whew, I don't think I'll ever do it again. Not a puppy.
I didn't realize she was so young still.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That is a baby. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. So how did you come up with like the dog names as the titles of these books? How did that, I love the names. Absolutely love the names that you guys have, but how did that come about?
Do I tell on myself? I'll be honest. So there's a great collar company that does these really high-end military grade collars. And I saw a picture one day with several of the collars because they're all embroidered. And we've got one for, we've got several for Andromeda. But I saw the names Fury, Chaos, and Riot. And I was just like, I'm stealing that. And so I was like, okay, so we need some other names. So we were looking at other names, and but I really wanted names that conveyed the intensity that comes with these dogs. So I didn't, you know, like Cruz says, you know, I didn't want Fluffy, you know. So
yeah, I know that was, yeah, it's like that fits them. It's intense. Are there military working dog named Fluffy? Is that even allowed?
You know, honestly, Lachlan names that gives them names after either handlers who have died or current handlers or people who work within the breeding program. So, you know, for them, I don't know. We did have last year a dog, he was 2 years old, and he, man, that dog was truly not right in the head, but his name was Cyril. So, you know, that, and that wasn't with a double letter like Lachlan does it. So I don't know where he was bred at. So they can have any name. I mean, look at the dog who just found that Pennsylvania escapee. Yoda is his name. Yoda. Dog's name. So,
or is that his code name? It's like his real name is classified. They just said Yoda. I don't know. Oh no, that is awesome. So for you, how was this mentoring experience seeing these authors craft books around this series that you started? How was that for you?
First of all, it was intensely personal. Yeah. And you know, it's funny, people say, you know, don't let it be personal, you know, when you're talking about writing and getting rejections and all that. It's just like, are you crazy? It's intensely personal. Yeah. You're putting your heart on the page, but it has truly been one of the most beautiful things I've ever been a part of. So I had, you know, years ago, I'd met Stephanie at an ACFW conference, and I remember seeing a sample of her work then. My jaw just hit the floor. I couldn't, when she told me it was the first book she'd ever written, worked on, because her writing was, I mean, I was like, people work years to get to this point. And so I was so thrilled when we did those blind auditions, and she was in the top group, and I was just like, ah! we narrowed it down, and we were like, okay. So I was so thrilled to see her come out of that. And it has been really neat and kind of it filled me with awe that these writers wanted to write like me. Mm. I mean, I have a lot of emotion, and, you know, I see all the people who don't read my books. I remember the people who say my books are too raw for them, too violent for them. And so to have writers willing to go through this process, which is not easy, and me pushing them, because it's like, well, you know, this is great, but this is not quite a Ronnie Kendig novel. And that was hard for me because I'm very sensitive. So I was also trying to be very attuned to just the creative process and not ruin it for them. And, you know, Because I know what it's like when I get my bad edits, when I get my macro edits from my editors, it's just like, you know, I'm eating donuts and crying. And it's just like, you know, I don't know why I thought I could do this. I'm the worst writer in the world, you know? And I was very worried about doing that, but they have been such champions and warriors. And they said, well, you're why I wanted to do this. I wanted to learn from you. And the books that are coming out of this, I'm just so pleased with. And I think the readers are going to, I think it's going to be hard to see a difference between mine and theirs.
Wow.
I think so. I think they're really good. So that's
That's got to be exciting too for you to be able to to be able to pass like that ability on. Like, what do you feel is so many much of the hang up? Because I feel like there's nothing different between your average like PG-13 action movie that you see, which you know is popular. What do you feel like is the roadblock? This is a little bit extra, to people who are like, oh, that's too violent for, you know, a faith-based, faith influence, however you want to categorize it, Christian fiction. What do you feel like that is like?
I think if you look at, for lack of better words, better term, the evolution of Christian fiction, we are not that far removed from the Jeanette Okey titles. So
True.
look at it, you know, in terms of that. So for me to have a character who is raw and intense, and I show those action scenes, I show that they've got to take down the bad guy. And that was actually kind of a learning process for me, learning where that line was. And that was, you know, very much between me and the Lord in that regard. But teaching these ladies, you know, how you write those scenes realistically, I use air quotes there, but also not make them graphic,
Yeah.
and but yet re enough realism that there's no doubt what happened. That's very tricky. And I think a lot of people don't want to look there, if that makes sense. They don't
Yeah.
want to look into the ugly side of life. And I think a lot of people come to fiction just looking for entertainment, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. That's not what I write, though. So, you know, you think about Jack Carr, you know, he's a former Navy SEAL commander, and the books he write, those things are raw as anything. But they are wildly popular out there because they're real and because that hero is flawed. And I think, you know, there's a little bit of political stuff in there. People, you know, with his vigilante character, you know. I think it's hard for some people to accept that there are those people that God put in them. You think of David, King David.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't even allowed to build the temple because he had blood on his hand, which blood partially of what God instructed him to do, you know, going against these nations. So he was a warrior. And so God puts these, even with my own son, I saw that at a very young age, he had that military bearing in him and that desire. And now, you know, he's down there learning how to be a combat medic, which I could never do. I would pass out. But I just think with many readers today, they aren't looking to be challenged in that respect.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that kind of like a little bit of a my brothers sometimes feel the frustration of that too. It's kind of like, you know, you see those examples of those mighty men of God in the Bible, but it's kind of like, but so much of your, you know, modern Christian thing is much more encouraging the men to be much more passive. And my brothers are definitely frustrated with that. So yeah, I can see why, you know, it can be a shift change that not everybody is made the same way. Different soldiers fight different battles. So okay. Where was I? Okay. So what can we expect after Havoc in the Breed Apart Legacy or say anything else that you want to share about readers in Havoc?
Wait, in Havoc or for the other books?
Well, like, is there anything else that you want to let readers know about Havoc, and then what can we expect after?
I think just with Havoc, I haven't had that much fun writing a story in a very long time. I loved those characters. I took a very different bent with Crew. I mean, he lost a leg in combat. I modeled him after Nick Lavery, I think. Just his my mind went blank. I don't remember what he's, I think he was in Special Forces, but I'm really embarrassed now that I can't remember that. But I modeled him after Nick Lavery, who went back into combat, and I loved that because he lost his leg. And you read so many stories out there that they got wounded and now they're bitter and hateful and all this kind of stuff. And I didn't want to go down that road. Crew has rolled with the punches as much as he can, and I wanted a different character. Arc for him. And I had a lot of fun with him and Havoc. So, and Vienna, of course, but yeah.
Yeah,
And
no, I really enjoyed him, and it was like part of me was like, I loved his like confidence and humor and both wounded at the same time. It's like there's like parts of him that like, oh, it kind of reminds me of Candyman, but he's totally different than Candyman. And it was like he just had that presence on the page that was so, I think, so memorable.
thank
So
you.
love.
I think for the next books, I think readers are going to be very pleased. Stephanie's writing two of the books, and then JJ, she's from Switzerland. She speaks multiple languages, and I'm floored that she writes.
Wow.
I mean, her ability to write action scenes really has just kind of floored me. Her tactical knowledge just was like, how do you, a first time author, even know this?
Wow.
I know, I was just really, really amazed. But I would challenge her on something. And she goes, yeah, but wouldn't, X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, well, yes, but and just that she even knew enough about the tactics to be able to ask me that, I was so impressed with her. So I think the readers are really, really going to be in for, they're going to enjoy them. I think they're really going to, I think y'all are going to really enjoy these books.
Yeah. So Havoc is releasing in all formats
Yes.
October 17th. And then the next one is due. They're all the rest of them are coming out in the new year, correct?
Correct. Chaos, with the first one by Stephanie, will be in January.
Okay.
And don't ask me the other dates, because they've gotten moved, so I don't remember.
January feels far enough away already.
Yeah. So, and I know that because I have had all my recent audiobooks have been by Adam, they managed to secure him, even though he's been taking a break because his voice got damaged. But I know that he is doing the audiobook. It might be a little bit late though.
Oh, that like his audiobooks are like, I feel like we should all take a collection and send him soup or whatever.
Is
Send him a care packager so he can get better quicker.
he's such a great guy. I got to interview him when Shadow of Honor released, and that was such a blast because I threw an excerpt from my most recent release from Shadow, and he hadn't even read it yet. And he just did it on the fly, and it was brilliant. So he's just amazing.
Yeah, no, that was definitely fantastic. So what is like next for you? Do you have any projects that you're just working on, can't share?
I'm kind of deliberately taking a step back. I turned down, my contract with Enclave, and I have not sought another contract for suspense because I really is so I'm experienced enough that I can write whatever needs to be written. And that sounds really arrogant, but it's just, after doing it for 15 years, it's just it, yeah, I can do it. But I was missing the passion and the excitement. So I've been deliberate about kind of stepping back, but God has put a really great series in my head for it's one of my space operas. And another series that kind of sprung from Havoc, that I'm toying with. So I don't know that it'll find the light of day or ink of publishing, but I really like these two characters, so we'll see if anything happens there. We'll see.
In your space opera, is it going to be the same as the same universe or different?
I think so. I you know, why reinvent the wheel? Because there is so much to invent. Stories.
I was like reading that. I have to read the fourth book, but I'm like, you did the world building so well in that one. I'm like, I, as somebody who has never picked up a space opera before, didn't feel overwhelmed. So I'm kind of like, I don't know how she did this, because I can picture it, but it was just, yeah, that was.
It is going to be tied to that universe. So in the Drusaren saga, I talk about the two quadrants that are, you know, Kedalion and Heracles, and this is the Helios quadrant. So we're going to go into the third quadrant, but they're still going to be tied. The main character is a distant relative to some of the other characters in the Drusaren saga. So it's tied, it's connected. There's some interconnectivity there, but I'm so
pardon? You have a lot of interconnectivity with all of your other books too. So
I love that. And I think the readers love that, because they're like, oh, I know that person, you know?
I know them.
Exactly.
So like with the publishing and everything like that, and we didn't even talk to, which is not that far away, so much to talk about, your Metcalf family series. Do you feel like, how was that releasing like a completely indie published thing? Do you feel like that you could do that again?
Yes, but I need to do it right. My original plan was to have all the books written and then release them, but we moved and life was just upended. My daughter, you know, almost died in an accident. It's just like, so I didn't write those 3 months that I was with her, which I thought, oh, I'm just going to be sitting there, I'll have all that time. But there was so much, I would do it again in a heartbeat, obviously, but you know, it was not a low stress environment. Because she couldn't do anything for herself while she was in recovery. But I would do it again, and I kind of am toying with doing it again, but I need to have the books written first, because trying to release them as I was writing them, that killed me. That's honestly part of why I'm taking a step back, because I had gone through a severe burnout. And I finally got I felt like I had my mojo back. And then I did that series, and that just slammed me into the ground. It was just, I did it backwards. I didn't do it right. So I have no regrets on the stories that came out, and I'm very pleased with them. But I need to do it right next time.
Well, you're learning what not to do, right?
Exactly. You know, while I did okay with indie publishing, I don't know that it's really where I want to be, because you have so much you have to do on your own. And that's not, I don't enjoy all that. I want to write. Yeah. And, that's
makes sense.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, see what we want to read it. So where is the best place for listeners to follow you and keep up to date with what you're doing, your releases, your awesome quotes from the books that you share, all the things?
Instagram's the best place. And my handle there is at Kendig Ronnie. But that's where I spend most of my time. Facebook got way too toxic for me. So I like Instagram. I like the pictures.
But they say a picture is worth 1,000 words, right?
There you go.
Oh, well, I really appreciate this, Ronnie, for talking to me, and I can't wait to see what the next step in there. And thank you again for bringing us all these great stories.
Well, thank you. It's my absolute pleasure.
I hope that you enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed recording that and having that opportunity to talk to such a fantastic author. If you are not following her, do yourself a favor and follow her, read her books. She is an amazing author, and Havoc is definitely one of my favorite reads this year. Until next time, May your TBR be unending.